Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Stay tuned, will you, if you're listening to the show or watching the show, because we have a genuinely very important piece of music for you to hear live coming up at 10:30. So please stay tuned for that. I know you're loyal listeners and you stay anyway, but I don't want anyone who might miss out to do so. A caller says, Craig, House Sligo special needs residents have all been relocated to houses in the community. My cousin lived there for over 50 years and is happy in his new surroundings. And that's what I was trying to just recognise in that piece, that until such time as I get a sort of a, excuse me, a more broad sense of what families think, the jury's out somewhat. Regarding the decongregation, the voice of the service users has not been mentioned. Surely that should be priority over even the opinions of family. There are always ways to communicate and gain opinion from anyone. That's my focus. That's what I'm looking for, all right? In my opinion, anyone responsible for damaging property should be made, help repair it instead of making excuses for them. Example, children letting off stream, etc. They came from a deprived background. I understand where you're coming from too, and I kind of recognised that that comment might be coming through during the course of that interview. Niall Collins, Fianna Fáil TD, is getting in a lot of bother, but hardly a mention of it in the mainstream media. Fair play to The Ditch for the expose. Indeed, and The Ditch are doing fantastic work, unless you're on the receiving end of it. And they're there, and they are to some extent mainstream. They aren't the big boys, so to speak, but they are doing their thing. And what I think is interesting about The Ditch, And particularly their most recent exposés, it's not necessarily that they are privy to secret information or necessarily whistleblowers in some cases. The reality is that this is publicly available information to a great extent, and it was they that dug through it and found anomalies and stuff that needed highlighting and so on and so forth. So indeed, they are there. They're active on social media, I think particularly Twitter, doing their thing. Coffee Morning is taking place this morning in the Parish Central Hall, Stranorlar. It's in aid of Special Olympics. It's from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Everyone is welcome. So that's ongoing at the moment, isn't it? Yes, get along to the Parish Central Hall, Stranorlar, and support Special Olympics. It's running until 12 noon. A cup of coffee would be absolutely fantastic. I wish I were there. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Karen Ferguson is Group Director of Nursing and Clinical Services in Sims IVF and joins us on the programme now. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Right, okay. A new survey is out. It highlights the concerns of fertility patients about the rollout of publicly funded IVF. And we were speaking to another representative group on this issue not so long ago. They were surprised there was no consultation with them, very little information about how things are going to progress moving forward. Are you in the same sort of wheelhouse, Karen?
Yeah, so just, I suppose, for a bit of background, it's thought that about 1 in 6 couples in Ireland are struggling to conceive. So due to a variety of reasons, many of which are considered to be medical in nature. So although there is some investigations and medications that can be completed through the public system, fertility treatments such as IVF are not currently publicly funded whatsoever, meaning patients are having to self-fund or borrow money in order to start a family. So last year, the government announced funding of $10 million for the 2023 budget. And while we really welcome this announcement that fertility treatment would finally be provided through the public system, there's still a real lack of clarity of information about the plans at this stage. So we're more than 6 months on and we still have very little detail on how exactly the money will be spent, what the criteria will be, how patients will be able to access this funding, and what are the associated timelines.
Why do you think there's such a lack of information so close to what we would hope would be a rollout date?
Yeah, that's kind of the million-dollar question, and that's what we're trying to find out. So with the limited details available currently publicly, Sims IVF engaged with our patient base and the wider network just to try and understand what their views were, to try and get their voice heard. So we noticed there's a lot of concern and a lot of anxiety among our patients. So we wanted to capture this. So this is why we did the survey. We carried it out in March there this year. It consisted of 1,088 respondents, some of which had treatment in the past and some who didn't. And then among that, total 90% were considered. 90% were concerned about the potential age limits for publicly funded treatment, whether there will be a limit on the number of IVF cycles that would be funded, what the criteria would be to actually access the treatment. So just to name a few of these statistics, 96% said that they were concerned about the access in terms of location and travelling. 85% were concerned about the number of cycles that would be covered, and 83% were concerned about the age limits or the BMI limits associated with this criteria.
And I mean, you know, for some people this might be quite pressing, or they're waiting to make a decision, or how might we fund going private, or should we? This is leaving an awful lot of people in limbo. And as I say, it's 2 months on since I spoke to another person on this, Karen, and we're no further on that purgatory, really, if that's not too strong a word for it. People still are in it. They don't know. Do we wait to see what we can do in public? Could we qualify? Do we try and go private? It must be an awful experience for people.
Yeah, so many of the people surveyed said that they would hold off having treatment in the hope that they would qualify for the funding. However, this is a cause for concern for many, because when there's so little guidance available about the specific criteria, the worry is that people wait and wait and wait for this to come through, and then they may not even be specific. They may not even qualify for the funding based on what that criteria is. So the fact that, you know, they're left in the dark when they're already going through a really stressful situation needing the treatment in the first place, it's just kind of adding fuel to the fire for these people. I mean, the statistics are completely understandable because the cost of treatment is high in Ireland. We're ranked one of the worst in Europe and the EU for funding for fertility treatment. This is going to be potentially couples' only chance to have a family. So the fact that there's such little clarity about it is making it even more difficult, because they're essentially putting their life on hold until they hear more.
And Karen, pardon my ignorance, is Sims IVF a private fertility provider?
Yeah.
So why
is currently funded?
What was the last bit again about funded?
IVF in Ireland is not currently publicly funded by any clinic.
I mean, obviously, Karen, you'd be very interested in the well-being of people and progressing as much as they... But from a Sims IVF perspective, you know, what is not in it for you? That sounds terrible, and I don't mean it like that. I'm just trying to understand where you sit in this. Is it that...
No,
your services going to be used publicly and you don't know yet, or you should know, or are you afraid that people aren't coming forward to use your services because the government's dilly-dallying? So, like, what are Sims IVF concerns from Sims' perspective?
So it's unclear for us as well as the patients. We haven't been given any specific information about what the rollout will consist of for individuals. You know, this wasn't really about individual clinics. This was about just trying to capture the voice of these patients who are waiting, because we're speaking to them every day and they have these questions. So it was more about kind of making their voice heard and trying to get the clarity for them. We as a clinic know what they know at this stage. So we don't know how the model will look and how that's going to be rolled out at this stage.
Yes.
It will, of course, affect clinics in some way, shape or form, but we don't yet know what that will be.
And Karen, I'm not questioning your motivation, and I hope you don't think so. It's just for a better understanding for me and for others, you understand.
Yeah,
because can you imagine a situation, like, do you believe that these services will be publicly provided or publicly funded? In other words, they might pay the likes of Sims IVF to do it, or are they going to establish their own facilities to do this? We probably don't know that.
Yeah.
There's not enough money really to give us an indication of what their true plans are.
Exactly, yeah. So we don't quite know at the minute. And I suppose that's a big decision that needs to be made that will help patients as well to make plans. So there was definitely discussions about patients going to their own clinics, but there was also discussions about there being like some sort of centre. But, you know, we need to think about timelines here. If these patients are already waiting such a long time to get this information, how long is it going to be until they actually get treatment if they're not going through their own specific clinics?
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit of muddy waters around it at the minute, because we don't actually know.
For sure, but Karen, and I think really, hopefully, this government, whatever government is in power next, it's grand to make announcements, but I think really the priority should be, even if we have to wait a little longer, make sure they're fully funded, fully thought out, and there is at least some level of detail that people can work with. Because whilst it might have sounded like a great headline the day after or on the day of this announcement, we've had this vacuum of information since, which causes great distress. So I think the powers that be need to think on that, particularly in matters of health or very sensitive matters, or matters really that people's anxieties and concerns would be greater compounded.
Yeah, and with regards to kind of clinics, and we work with other clinics as well, trying to get kind of information from the government around this and with kind of support groups in Ireland. But with regards to actual rollout, what we want to see is that the right people are involved in the conversation in order to ensure that it's a fair and it's a fit-for-purpose service. And, you know, there's a wealth of industry experts in this country who want to help and want to be involved in the process. So I suppose we're urging the government to move forward with this initiative, but mainly to try and provide the guidance and the clarity for the patients. Because from the survey, we've seen there's a real lack of trust in it, unfortunately, and in the information that's been kind of drip-fed so far. So that's the main kind of message that we wanted to get across.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe this is another strong argument for more diverse representation in politics to try and keep pushing these issues on and looking at it from different sides. I'm not saying this is a woman's issue necessarily, don't get me wrong, but I just think sometimes maybe if we had more people with different backgrounds in the decision-making progress, we could try and avoid these mistakes. Karen, listen, thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it, and hopefully there is some progress in this area soon.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Karen Ferguson, Group Director of Nursing and Clinical Services in Sims IVF. Just to mention this scam that's going around again. It's been around for quite some time, but I suppose if you don't hear us talking about it or you haven't received the text before, it works on our fear, you see, and we don't make great decisions when we're scared or worried. And it's a text that comes through from a number, and it's not like it used to be a number from a far-flung country. The scammers now can clone Irish numbers, so they look legit, right? This one listener got a text in, and it said as follows: "Hi, Mum, I'm texting you off a friend's phone. I've smashed mine, and their phone is about to die. Can you call text me on my new number, which is..." And then they give a new number. Now, once you start engaging in that, who's to say how the scam unfolds from there? So if you do get that text, try and have some sort of even... Are we at the point yet whereby you would ask a question? You see, the phone would go dead, so you probably couldn't ask them a question back. They probably won't engage with you after that. You'll text the new number. I think I'd fall for this one because, I think most parents might. So if you get a text saying, "Hi, Mum, I'm texting you off a friend's phone," or something close to it, "I've smashed mine. Theirs is about to die." In other words, there's no point texting it back. "Can you call text me on my new number?" And that's how they start. That's how they start drawing you into the scam. A emailer, Richard, says, "I live in the Gortley area of Letterkenny. In the past few weeks, between 12 a.m. and 4 a.m, I can hear a loud noise coming from somewhere in the area, which wakes me every night. It's an industrial sound like drilling, grinding and scraping. I don't know where it's coming from, but since now the weather is warmer and I have my windows slightly open at night, it's even worse. Has anyone else reported this or knows what it is? I'm sure it's contravening some kind of noise level guidelines." So are you in and around the Gortley area? And you know what? It might not actually be directly in that area. The sound might be travelling as far as the Gortley area, but this noise could be emanating from elsewhere. This listener reports an industrial sound like drilling, grinding and scraping. It's waking them up every night. It's between 12 a.m. and 4 a.m. and it's disrupting their sleep. Any insights? Have you experienced this? Do you know where it's coming from? 086 6025000. Let us know. Let us help that gentleman and everybody else in the house, it sounds like, get a decent night's sleep. The happiest of birthdays to Bibby Clafferty in Tandaragee, Clonmany. Bibby is 100 years old today from your next ex-neighbour, Margaret Farron. Bibby, you were the best neighbour anyone could have. Kind, welcoming, generous. Have a great day and enjoy the singing. And I love the name Bibby. I wonder, is that a nickname or is that a given name? B-I-B-B-Y. Bibby Clafferty. 100 years old today. Margaret Farron's your former neighbour, and she's sending you all the love in the world. And can we join too, Bibby, in wishing you a really happy birthday? I hope you have a lovely, lovely day. I got a letter about moving to a smart meter, says this listener. I told the ESB I don't want one. They said it was fine, keep the old system. I think Greg is wrong to say that they will eventually become compulsory. I read my meter every 2 months and sent it to the ESB. I think we need to stick to our guns. If we give these people an inch, they'll take a mile. I possibly could be wrong, but I don't think so, to be honest with you. Things change, things progress. There's a way they're going with it, and smart meters is it. We asked also about, from a listener, what do you give if you're going to a wedding? And I only got these today. I only got round to them today. We had a listener who's heading to a wedding. Hopefully, it's probably Friday. Would it be? Maybe people are getting married today. And what do you put in the card? They ought to do the right thing. You don't want to, money's tight, right? You don't want to overspend, but at the same time, you don't want to be a cheapskate either. Wedding present, quick pick, and a scratch card. I don't know if I was invited to the evening. They might not even get that. Hi, Greg. €250 for a niece or nephew. €200 for a friend. That comes in from Anne. So if it's a rally, €250. €200 for a friend. I think if I was going on my own, I don't think I'd go to two, but a couple maybe. Let me see. I want to make sure I stick on point here. If I'm invited to a wedding, I would give €100 if I'm not attending, and €150 if I am attending. If two people are attending, I'd give €200. I think that's about right. I never really thought, I don't get invited, me, the invitation to me to too many weddings. If I wasn't attending, would you give money if you're not attending? I'm being probably too honest here. How much in a card for a wedding gift? Crumbs. They're almost as expensive. As for First Communion now, that comes in from Jared and Ballykelly, right? Communions and confirmations, I think, are on at the moment. Confirmations, anyway. How much do you put in a confirmation card? Let's group thought here. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to get to some more comments, more content, more people to talk to. But next, we have a bit of a conversation about a very special piece of music, which you'll hear live. And I believe the only people so far to hear this piece of music live were in attendance in Dublin at the Donegal Person of the Year, which honoured and awarded that honour to the people of Chrysla. And a very special piece of music was written specifically for that occasion. It's available for you to listen to. We'll tell you where. But we're going to give you a live performance. I'm not sure outside of that performance in Dublin if it's performed live anywhere else. But anyway, stay with us and you'll get to hear it. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And we're joined in studio now by two excellent musicians, Matt McGranahan. And it's nice to have you in studio, Matt. And it's nice to have you in studio with an instrument with you as well.
That's
because
right. Yeah.
Often we engage and it's more conversational.
Yes, Greg, sort of more political, more about the industry and that.
Exactly,
so,
which
so
is important.
To be here to perform, Greg,
but
thanks
for
inviting
sure.
me.
And we are really delighted to have you with us. And Denise Roper's joining us as well. Denise is on piano.
Hi, Greg.
Thanks for calling in. Right, okay, so we heard an amazing piece of music. Those of us who were lucky enough to be in attendance at the Donegal Person of the Year Awards in the Bonington in Dublin on Saturday, Matt. And you had created a piece of music for that. So talk to me a little bit about it.
Well, I was asked by Peggy Stringer from the committee back in January to perform. And we were at an event and I said to her, sort of cheekishly, you know, would you like me to write something? And she said that was going to be my next question. And so it started from there. And of course, trying to figure out something like this, where do you start with a piece of music for such an unspeakable tragedy? But I started to think about it, Greg, in the time from October the 7th and what had happened. And I started to think about that in the weeks and the days that followed, that I wanted to be in Donegal more. I wanted to be, you know, Donegal's just, we're spoiled by the mountains and the nature and the landscape. I found myself that I wanted to be there and I wanted to be among my own community because I thought this could have happened anywhere. And if this had happened in Castlefinnan, it could have happened in Stranorra or anywhere. So I started to think about those things and then about our sense of belonging to a place and our sense of belonging to a people or community. And I started to realise then that that leads to our sense of self and then also our sense of the other. And for some people, that's religion. Some people, it's nature, whatever it is. And I started to realise that these four senses or four affinities, these are places that we go for healing. These are places that we go in times of tragedy, times of grief, and especially in times of something like this. And I realised then that people all over the world from Donegal wanted to be in Donegal. And people from Ireland who were all around the world, they wanted to be at home in Ireland with their families at this time. So I started to think about that I needed to find a word that encapsulated all that, because that word was going to be the title of the piece. This is even before a note was thought about. And there is no word in English that I could think of. So I thought, well, it must be an Irish, and I'm not an Irish speaker. So I contacted Anya Ní Corran, that I know formerly from Radio Na Gaeltachta, and Anya put me in touch with Micheál O'Donnell from National University in Galway. So we started to trawl through, he started to trawl through old manuscripts and old dictionaries, and I would give him definitions of words, and he'd come back to me, and we'd go over and back. And sure enough, we found that our ancestors identified these affinities already, because they created words for them. So we have the word duchess, and that's affinity to your past, to the landscape, culture, or heritage. Fearless, which is an affinity to your community, to your tribe, to your people. Anam, which is an affinity to your sense of self and your soul. And dochas, which is an affinity to belief, hope, and faith, whatever that may be. So then we needed one word to describe all this, and the Aboriginal people have identified these four principles in life as well. And they had a word called Kanyini, which was the overarching term for all four principles. So we set about, and Micheál found an old Donegal word that is kind of not in common use, called Dev. And from there we put the prefix Ull, O-L-L, onto it to create Ull Dev, which is the title of the piece. And we thought we created a new word until Micheál went looking, and sure enough he found it in the Book of Leinster in 1160. And that was the last time that it was in written form. Mm. And the last time we think it's been used. So we've resurrected this word. We don't know what it was. We don't know what it meant 1,000 years ago. But we've resurrected this new word. So Uldev is that word that encapsulates these four affinities. So it's Uldev means the great affinity. And that was the starting piece for then trying to write the piece of music.
There's a few sort of moments on that journey before you even start writing the piece of music that... was it joining the dots? Is there something spiritual to it? And I mean spiritual in whatever sense that, you know, that relates to you. Just that it's such a journey, across continents really to arrive back at this word you thought you were creating that actually exists. And then there's a mystery of this word, what this word actually means to some extent. I mean, there's like it's not an insignificant part of everything, if you get where I'm trying to.
No, it's not. And there was something to me, you know, when you can put a title on something and when you can identify, and our ancestors have identified those words because someone felt that before. Someone felt of this sense of belonging to a place, and they felt it so much they had to create a word for it. And I think in the healing process, you know, music to me is incredibly powerful for healing. But to couple it up with this sense of this... identifying or identification of a philosophy, maybe of healing. Mm. I just hope that it will bring some sort of comfort to people.
I'm not sure if I was saying it to you or who I was saying it to on Saturday night, in that, you know, a number of people had to speak and had to find the right words. And how do you? Mm. They did, mm-hmm. right?
They did.
But in a way, the music, it felt like that might be easier. Because I can listen to it, right? Mm. And I was writing the words myself, I was reacting how I wanted to react to what it meant to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas words were more triggered with the words, and I think that's where the challenge. And they met the challenge, I think,
they did,
really well. But do you understand where I'm coming from?
I think the beauty of instrumental music is that it's really open to the interpretation of the listener, and so wherever it falls for people, it reveals. It reveals new things to each person that listens to it, and they take something else out of it. And the piece of music itself, how we came to starting it as well, was that I wanted Chrysler to be the very foundation of the piece of music. So I'm sure many of your listeners will understand that music is written on 7 notes, which we name A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So I linked those notes to the letters of the alphabet and repeated them. So A became A, G became G, H became A, I became B, and so on. And from there I spelt out the word Chrysler, and that gave me the first 10 notes of the piece. And those 10 notes, when played, they naturally sound like a calling out, like a cry. So that's the very foundation. Chrysler itself spells the first 10 notes of the piece. Mm-hmm. It's embedded into the very foundation of it. And from that, out of that, the tune is born, I suppose. And the tune moves and goes in whatever directions it goes. But then, obviously, the at the very heart of it, of all of this, the very core of it all, are the 10 people and the 10 lives. And so I wanted, in the same way, I did something similar with them and linked their being and their life and their name to a note as well. So as you think the piece of music's about to finish, these 10 individual notes ring out, and they're not accompanied by any harmony. They're just on their own, and they're each note's followed by a short silence. And to me, I'm not revealing, as I said, I'm not revealing the identity of those notes to the public. Those are going to be revealed to the families. There are 10 individual scores that I'm bringing to Chrysler this afternoon, and they will be presented to the families at a time that suits them with Father John Joe. And within that score, each family will know the identity of their loved one's note, and it'll be up to them what they do with that. But to me, that note isn't just a note. It's a rebirth or a renaissance. And every time that note's played, that person's been remembered.
Mm. How different has this process been to process? It sounds so emotionally disconnected, and it's literally the opposite of that, right? So how different has this process, I'll use that word, been to other works that you've written? Did this feel more personal? Because I think, I would imagine, sorry, I can't presume, that in this process, till you got to a point where you could actually even maybe come up with a word, or like you went on your own journey yourself in who you are, where you're from, what you want, how you were might have been impacted as well. So, you know, there's quite a journey here, a personal journey, a bit of research, and then the composition, and then finding the meaning. I mean, it's really a significant whole process.
It's been a... Look, when I look back on this, you know, as I said, it was the end of January that I kind of dropped myself in it and suggested that I would write something. And then in the days that it was going after, I was thinking, what in God's name? And how is this going to happen? And by the first week of March, I had it finished. But during that time, I had so many other things on and happening and different things on. And when I look back at that time, I don't even know where it came from, and I don't even know, because it didn't feel like work, or it didn't feel.
Mm-hmm. But maybe like the cast was dying. Maybe the cast was dying from the moment you said, "Yes, I'll perform, but I could also compose something."
Yeah, look, I don't know.
I mean, you said that in full knowledge of how busy you would be. So, in other words, you know what I mean. It just fell into place.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know where the idea for the notes that it's actually. Little things. I wrote a piece last year, and the motif at the beginning, I wrote it for a couple of friends of mine that were getting married, and I structured it. The first few notes were inspired by the first letters of their names.
Yes.
And that's what began the motif. And
keep speaking for a moment.
You know, the rest of everything here, I don't really know where it came from, and I don't even really take any credit for it, because the music is so incredibly powerful, and I'm just very humbled that I'm kind of just a vessel that it's channeled through. But in the past couple of years, I've begun to really realise the huge, incredibly emotional healing power of music. And, you know, I've become very honest. It's taken me 40 years to sort of find my voice, or find what's important within music, and that's the journey that I'm setting off on now. And Aldev, I think, is just a lot of years of emotional power with music just been distilled into one piece.
A couple of listeners before we hear the piece want to know how you're spelling or how old, if it's O-L-L-D-R, father, I-M-H.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's the, you know, essentially the prefix all, like old scald or something like that, and dev is that old sort of word that means great affinity or affinity.
Okay. So, do you want to go straight into the piece of music? Or do you want me to take a break? I think it'd be nice maybe to go with the flow whilst we've been speaking, if that's all right.
And if it's okay to just suggest to anyone who's listening at home, if they're able or at all, you know, to sit and be relaxed and comfortable for this, and if they do, to maybe close their eyes and just go wherever the piece of music takes them.
This is Matt McGranahan, who's on fiddle, and Denise Roper as well, who is a very important role in this piece as well, on piano. Right. That's an amazing piece of music, Matt. And I know you've described those 10 notes being at the end, but in my mind, I interpret it as some slightly different in that they're not quite at the end, and then there's something that follows, and that's up to each individual perhaps.
They're not at the end. They're very much part and parcel and in the middle of, and that's where they should be.
Yeah.
10 people should always be there.
Yeah, they are. And then what happens afterwards? I don't know. Is that as we move forward? I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not asking you to tell me because I want that to be what I feel. You know, that sort of a way.
It goes back. Yeah. The first 10 notes are heard, the Chrysler theme.
Yeah.
As heard again, and then just the body of the piece is played.
And notwithstanding how important it is and its significance, it's actually a wonderful piece of music without the context. It really is.
Thank you.
Excellent. And Denise, your role in this is not insignificant either, because you have to be there, but at the same time...
Well, to be honest though, Matt did all the writing. It's much easier for me. The whole genesis of it and the whole idea of it is Matt's.
It is, but you offer great support there in what you're doing. It's subtle, but it's there and it's important and it's needed as well.
And may I say, you know, her personality, her talent is only matched by her patience and kindness as a performer and a backer. When you have an accompanist like this, and you know, when you're telling, don't do that and do this, and she's very gracious about following instructions, and not, they may not always be correct. So it's wonderful to have.
May I
like
say
that.
Respectfully, I don't think you're the first diva she's worked with.
No, I would imagine not.
My lips are sealed.
As all a good accompanist.
Absolutely. Okay. To the grave.
Okay, listen, it's been lovely having you in. It's an important day today as part of this process now, and this is private, and we're not going to encroach on that here, anyway, on air, but you're going... to do, as you outlined a little earlier on, in terms of presentations and what have you. So this is maybe the sort of the pinnacle of the project. I don't know. Obviously, you never know where things go from here. No. But this is
an important, you know, for me to that the 10 pieces of music are delivered now to the families, and that they will have that. And it's you know, I hope that the piece of music brings them some. It's not going to fix it. It's not going to heal. It's not going to do anything like that.
But it doesn't have to be today.
No.
For some people, it might be in 6 months. For some, it might be 15 years.
If it carries them through.
Exactly.
Some of the days that they will face. Yeah. Greg, just finally, I'd like to thank the Donegal Association in Dublin for doing what they did, because it was a difficult decision, and damned if they do and damned if they don't.
Mm.
But, you know, we had the privilege of being there on Saturday night, and it was the most beautiful, dignified, respectful evening that I've been at, and it was handled so immaculately by them. And as you said, the Donegal Association people who spoke, their words were incredible.
Yeah.
And I'd like to thank yourself as well for allowing us to come on and do this here this morning. And this has just been the second performance of it. And it's not something I will be performing at my own concerts or anything like that, because it's for other people.
Well, listen, I thought it important you come on because you've reached the people that were in that room that evening. Hopefully through this platform and people can listen back, you'll reach an awful lot of people, the people that, you know, but obviously this is about the 10 victims and their families and those around them. And also it is available as well. How do people access that? I know there's a QR code on.
There was,
more generally speaking.
So it's on my website.
Okay.
So mattmcgranahan.ie. /OLDEF, OLLDAIMH. But you'll see it if you go to mattmcgranahan.ie.
Yeah.
It'll be found there. And it's available, the story behind it's on the website, and it's available on a player there to listen for free as many times as you want.
And we have to throw you in here, we have to throw Denise here and her keyboard, but I think we did it justice in terms of what went out, because we have to do it in, you know, the way it is. And I'm sure both of you are perfectionists in that regard, but I think we did it. I certainly believe we were able to do justice with the sound that was put out on the radio.
Thank you.
Denise Roper on piano. It was beautiful what you do, and thank you so much for making yourself available to us as well. Matt McGranahan, a fiddle musician, thank you very much for joining us as well. So, and we've had a huge reaction to it all, really, really positive. Good. People emotionally moved by it as well, and I think the setup to that forms a quite an important part of that as well. But listen, for now, both of you, thank you so very much. We'll be back after a break.
Thank you.